Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, February 11th. We'll start today with the piece of audio that was maybe the newest and most revealing thing that the House impeachment managers revealed in their opening arguments. This is from a police radio as the mob is storming the Capitol, and the dispatcher and the Capitol Police on the scene are realizing that the mob has breached the police line and cannot be held back.
We've lost the line! All NPD, pull back! All NPD, pull back up to the upper deck!
Capitol Police audio released for the first time in the impeachment trial opening arguments. We'll get a take on the proceedings now from Eli Honig, CNN legal analyst and host of a daily impeachment podcast called Third Degree. He's a former federal prosecutor and New Jersey state prosecutor. Hi, Eli. Thanks a lot for coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
So glad to be on with you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And we'll play some sound bites that you highlighted from yesterday in your podcast. But Sure. What were you thinking? What were you feeling when you heard the panic in that officer's voice saying, "We lost the line"?
I have to tell you, Brian, listening to that clip and viewing a lot of the new evidence from yesterday, I was sort of torn in two respects. On the one hand, I was thinking, well, all of this is stuff that we kind of knew already. We knew that the officers were under heavy attack. We knew that they were outmanned. We knew they were in an incredibly dangerous situation. And we knew that members of Congress and their staffs were in danger. So intellectually, to me, it was sort of like, well, there's nothing really new here. But boy, the emotional, the visceral reaction was remarkable. I mean, to hear that recording that you just played really drives it home. And that matters. That matters whether you're doing a criminal prosecution at a trial like I used to do, when you're doing an impeachment trial. No, it's not a criminal trial. There's a lot of important differences. But you have to appeal to your audience. And here the audience is, I guess, technically the Senate, but really the American public. And watching those videos yesterday, watching just how close the mob came to Mitt Romney, to the vice president, to other members of Congress, getting to see and hear what those police officers experienced firsthand was really, to me, extraordinarily compelling.
Eli, you made clear in your podcast how impressive you thought day one of the impeachment manager's presentation was overall. A clinic for law students on how advocacy works, you said. Do you want to give us the basics of why you were so impressed?
Yeah, a clinic not just for law students, but any student or really even anyone in any profession. The presentation that we saw yesterday was a couple things. It was focused. It was clear and it was concise. I watched all day and look, I tend to be fairly critical of these kind of things. I did it for a living as a prosecutor. I guess I do it now for a living in the media. I never once found myself thinking, wait, what's the point of this? What's this person? What's this representative talking about? Why is this relevant? At all moments, you knew exactly what they were saying and why it fit into the bigger picture. That was one aspect of it. Another aspect, I thought they expertly blended the sort of speaking aspect, the standing behind the lectern aspect, with the visual aspect, with the way that they presented the visual evidence and they blended it in. It made it more interesting, more engaging, really more easy to understand and to follow. I mean, I'll give you a couple of examples. There were several times where they put timelines up on the screen and they would say, while Donald Trump was tweeting this, here's what was happening in the Capitol. And you got to see them side by side, and it helped to make connections in the viewer's head. Also, they had these graphics where they were showing these horrible scenes happening inside the Capitol, and they had a map of the inside of the Capitol building with a red dot where that video was happening. So you could go, oh my goodness, that was two steps away from the Senate chamber. So I thought that was really impressive. And the last thing is, I think they struck just the right balance between sort of the intellectual appeal, making a cogent, coherent, logical argument, but not in a robotic way. There's a fine line to me between being passionate and injecting some of your own self into what you're doing and becoming self-indulgent. And I think that they hit that balance perfectly. A lot of them had little personal anecdotes about what they went through that day, or sometimes they mentioned a family member or some emotional thing, but it did not swamp the substance. I think, if anything, it enhanced the substance. So all of those are things I try to teach my students, and I think we all can learn from in the presentation aspect.
Really interesting. And here's a clip you used from Congressman Jamie Raskin's presentation to show the use of metaphor.
This case is much worse than someone who falsely shouts fire in a crowded theater. It's more like a case where the town fire chief, who's paid to put out fires, sends a mob not to yell fire in a crowded theater, but to actually set the theater on fire.
So, fire in a crowded theater, taking that metaphor to another level?
Yeah, I think it's actually a better use of the metaphor. Look, metaphors can be useful, but that one about yelling fire in a crowded theater becomes sort of this catch-all for just anything First Amendment-y. But it's really not an adequate way to describe what happened here. And I think Jamie Raskin took that metaphor, and he didn't over-exaggerate. I mean, as you're listening to him spin his own thing about setting fire and going home and watching on TV, you're thinking, yeah, I mean, that is applicable here. So you have to be careful when you're doing that kind of thing. But it really worked. I think it really made this whole case, or at least the House impeachment manager's case, more understandable to the viewer.
And as you describe it in your podcast, they laid out three main arguments, and one of them was it could have been much worse than it was. And that is a perfect example, I think, of something that most people know. But one of the other things that was new along those lines was video of how close the angry mob came to Mitt Romney in particular, who they would likely have recognized and may well have been interested in harming or even killing. Big new moment?
I thought it was. I really did. I mean, look, you can see on that video, you see Romney, he's walking. You can see the crowd in the background of the video. And Officer Eugene Goodman, who's now rightly become, I think, an American hero, I don't care what your politics are, runs past, spins Romney around, and you see Romney run. I mean, he takes off for a guy of his age. He moves pretty good. But, I mean, you can see him. Mitt Romney was, I don't know, 20, 50 steps away from that crowd. And it's really terrifying when you think about it. And I think an interesting question is, what would have happened? Would it have changed things? Would it have changed Donald Trump's outcome in this impeachment trial if, God forbid, the rioters had gotten their hands on, let's say, Mitt Romney or any elected official and done harm to them? Would that have changed things? I don't know. I've actually heard a difference of opinion. I think it would. I think if they ended up killing, God forbid, a Mitt Romney or anybody who was close to the mob, I don't see how Donald Trump survives. I know he has survived many, many things politically, but to me that would be too much to bear. But not everyone agrees with that.
And here's Congressman Eric Swalwell, one of the impeachment managers, reinforcing that.
As you were moving through that hallway, I paced it off. You were just 58 steps away from where the mob was amassing.
So that's one argument. It could have been so much worse than it was. And they're focusing on the big picture, not just about January 6th. That's your message number two, as you understand what their three big points are. They're focusing on the big picture, not just about January 6th, message number two. And you pulled this clip of Congressman and House impeachment manager Joe Neguse.
So his false claims about election fraud, that was the drumbeat being used to inspire, instigate, and ignite them.
And you saw clips like that as an inoculation against an argument that the Trump defense will likely make?
Yeah, I do, Brian. So a couple things. First of all, I think it is absolutely in the interest of the House managers here to make sure people understand the bigger picture, that as Representative Neguse said, this was not just something that arose spontaneously on January 6th and got out of control. This was months in the making, in the planning. Because here's what I think we're going to see when Donald Trump's lawyers get their shot, probably starting tomorrow. They are going to try to isolate and put in a vacuum, not just the January 6th rally, but each individual statement that was made at the rally. And so they're going to say, okay, so Donald Trump said, fight like hell. What's wrong with that? That's nothing more than free speech. Is it aggressive political rhetoric? Sure. But they're going to, I guarantee you, they're going to have a video of a dozen Democrats over the years saying, we need to fight. We need to fight for this. We need to fight hard for that. But what I think the House impeachment managers were doing is preemptively saying, but it's different. It's different to stand in front of a group at a normal political rally where you don't have this month's worth of buildup of fomenting a lie, of sort of fomenting anger, of promoting and applauding violence that you had that preceded the January 6th rally. So I think they're trying to say this is different. This is not the same as politician X of whatever party you want to say standing up in front of a normal rally crowd and saying, let's fight for our right to whatever. Let's fight for our right to privacy. Let's fight for our right to pick your issue here. That's different than standing up in front of this crowd, given all the history behind Donald Trump's campaign, really, to whip up and weaponize that crowd.
All right, let's take some phone calls, and then I want to throw at you, well, we'll also play a few more of the clips that you pulled to highlight from yesterday, but then I'm going to throw at you some arguments that I saw on conservative media last night making Trump's case against what the Democrats were producing yesterday and see what you think. But let's go first to Biba in Jersey City. Biba, you're on WNYC with Eli Honig, CNN legal analyst and host of the podcast Third Degree. Hi, Biba.
Hello, Brian. Thank you so much for taking my call. And I know I've come after a while on your show. And, you know, I've also been following this impeachment. And, you know, what really bothers me, and I come from a military family, you know, men in, you know, in uniform. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they lost a very courageous Capitol Police officer. And don't these congressmen and senators, you know, isn't it an insult when they've lost somebody and those officers that showed so much courage, the one who defended Mitt Romney, for their sake, why are they opposing this impeachment? I mean, that's American people, people who give their lives, you know, these officers. I mean, they stand, they were ready to give their lives for these senators and congressmen. And this is what is troubling, that even after they lost, you know, that officer who died, even then these congressmen and senators like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, they went and they protested about the Electoral College votes. And, you know, it shows that they do support Trump despite all this, that they didn't think he did anything wrong.
So, or they, you know, think so, like, but they won't say so. Biba, thank you for all of that. And Eli, to one of Biba's points specifically, because she brings up Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, the third point that you framed that they were trying to make yesterday is that they argued that Trump demanded complete loyalty or would pressure you in various ways. And you cite this clip of Congressman and House impeachment manager Ted Lieu speaking, in effect, to Republicans in the Senate.
Let me be very clear. The president wasn't just coming for one or two people or Democrats like me. He was coming for you, for Democratic and Republican senators. He was coming for all of us.
So talk about that, Eli.
Yeah, one interesting thing I think the Democrats did yesterday that was really enlightening was they showed this pattern that Donald Trump has had to an extent throughout his presidency, but they really focused on the summer of 2020 when it became clear that he was not on a good path for the election, when he started to come to grips with this idea that he was possibly going to lose that election. And essentially what he did was turn to everybody who he had any interaction with and essentially make clear to them, I expect you not only to be loyal to me, but to maximize and perhaps exceed your legal authority to do whatever you can to make sure I win this election. And if anybody said, I'm not willing to go that far, he immediately turned on them, cast them out, or worse. Everybody from his own Department of Justice, I mean, Bill Barr had been endlessly loyal to Donald Trump. But when Bill Barr finally got pushed to a point where he said, I'm not willing to go quite that far, that relationship completely collapsed. Obviously, Donald Trump has never been shy about picking fights with Democrats, but he also did it to Republicans. He did it to local officials. We all heard the tape where Donald Trump tried to lean on the Georgia Secretary of State, just a humble, you know, state-level official, and the President of the United States is turning on him. And then ultimately he did it to members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, who he deemed not sufficiently helpful to his cause, whether it was Ben Sasse or Mitt Romney, all the way up to and including, ultimately, his own vice president. He turned on Mike Pence in those final days, including while the riot was going on, and really endangered Mike Pence. So I think when you step back and you say, yeah, this is all part of his obsession and his willingness to do anything to try to stop himself from losing power.
Let me play a clip of Congresswoman and House impeachment manager Stacey Plaskett. She is from Brooklyn originally. She represents the U.S. Virgin Islands, and she talks here about truth.
Truth is usually seen and rarely heard. Truth is truth, whether denied or not. And the truth is, President Trump had spent months calling his supporters to a march on a specific day, at a specific time, in specific places, to stop the certification.
Talk about that clip. And if you've been paying attention to her, talk about Stacey Plaskett. Help introduce us to this member of Congress who's making a great impression.
She is. She's such an interesting person with an interesting background. The thing that jumped out to me is that she was a Bronx assistant district attorney. I mean, I don't know how many people, what a leap, right, from being a Bronx ADA to being a United States congressperson representing the Virgin Islands. I tend to be partial towards, forget about politics or partisanship, former prosecutors I always sort of root for, and I think she you could see that she was a former prosecutor in the way she presented the case. And by the way, I think people think, oh, prosecutors or former prosecutors, they must be super tough and angry and aggressive. No, the good ones are exactly what we saw from Representative Plaskett, which is measured and direct and forceful when necessary. I thought her presentation was fascinating, and I think the point she made there is such a basic one and such an important one, which is, I mean, to say truth is self-evident, but she made the point, and I think it was keyed to this specific case, that seeing it is more powerful than hearing about it, because they have the luxury, the House managers, of the fact that virtually the entire case they need to make is on tape, the president's own words. There's no secret backroom conversations that Donald Trump had that are part of this impeachment trial. They may have occurred, but we don't know about them. Everything that they're using against Donald Trump is something he said on camera or he tweeted out. And what happened in the Capitol? I mean, it's all on, not all, but enough of it is on video that we understand just how horrible it was. So that makes for a much more powerful case presentation than, for example, having to call a witness who says, well, I had a secret conversation where I overheard Donald Trump saying X, Y, Z. That's a little, you know, then you get into sort of your areas of argument. But when it's on tape, it should be straightforward. And I think that's what she's trying to say.
For people who didn't know that there is a representative from the Virgin Islands, do they get a vote?
I think not. I believe they are non-vote. But the same way I know, for example, Washington, D.C. has had, I think they're technically called delegates. I heard her referred to as a delegate yesterday. Uh-huh. Eleanor Holmes Norton is the longtime Washington, D.C. representative who is non-voting.
Right. And that one, of course, is crazy and source of much debate. That's why one of the reasons people want to make Washington, D.C. a state, so it's elected member or members of Congress can actually vote and represent their constituents. And maybe someday someone will make that case about representatives from the Virgin Islands and other U.S. territories or possessions or whatever the exact right word is there. But I will say that we're going to try to get her on the show. Representative or Delegate Plaskett may represent the Virgin Islands today. But Brooklyn wants you back. The Bronx wants you back, at least for a conversation on your New York radio station. Okay. Some of the pro-Trump analysis that I saw from some of the guests on Fox yesterday. So let me throw three of their main arguments at you. And
all right.
Number one is the House managers are trying to make a case that Trump is guilty of incitement, not because he ever explicitly asked anyone to break into the Capitol, but because some of those people interpreted him that way. He's not responsible for their interpretation of him using political language. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that will be, I believe, impeachment defense 1A from Trump's lawyers. Okay, first of all, a person does not have to stand up at a podium and say, I hereby incite you to insurrection in order to incite insurrection. we are allowed, we as the American public, we as whether it's a jury in a criminal case or we as our representatives in Congress who will be deciding this case, it is okay to use common sense. And this is why the Democrats have been focusing on the big picture. They talk about all the coded language, all of the, over the years, all the times when Donald Trump gave a little wink and a nod to violence being perpetrated on his behalf, on Donald Trump's effort to anger, to whip this crowd essentially into a frenzy, to call them there specifically on the date the votes are being counted, and then to set them off. And also, let's remember, this isn't the same as standing in front of any crowd. This is a crowd that had just heard Rudy Giuliani get behind the mic and shriek trial by combat. This crowd had just heard Representative Mo Brooks say it's time to kick ass and take names. And also, the crowd itself was a crowd that was, as the caller just said, was armed. A lot of them had zip ties, stun guns. This was a crowd that had, we now know, many several people who were part of these sort of extremist groups, Proud Boys and others. The crowd was waving Confederate flags. There was people in the crowd wearing anti-Semitic clothing, referencing the Holocaust and Auschwitz and that kind of thing. So this is not, this is not going to make give an address at the local YMCA. So I think that's going to be the fundamental conflict here. Democrats are going to say it was obvious what he meant. Donald Trump knew his followers understood his language, and he knew that they would do exactly what they ended up doing. And the response is going to be, but he never said anything that bad explicitly, and they got out of control and went beyond what he could have foreseen.
Another argument they made, the charge, of course, is incitement of insurrection. And they said insurrection would be an inappropriate word for what happened at the Capitol, therefore an inappropriate charge against Trump. It was a criminal riot, but an insurrection is more of an organized attempt, like with an army, of overthrowing a government. I'm broadly paraphrasing this argument that I heard from one of the pro-Trump lawyers. So insurrection, no. Your reaction?
That's an interesting one. I hadn't heard that one yet. That's creative. I'm not buying that because look at the timing. I mean, again, as I said before, January 6th was not a date they chose because the weather was going to be nice in Washington, D.C. They chose January 6th because that is the statutory date, the legal date on which the votes are counted. They even timed the rally itself to the actual counting of the votes. So, I mean, it's not to, and look, you see people going into that building going, where they're looking for the ballots. They're looking for representatives. So, no, this is not the same as if he had incited, or if he went, let's to use another Washington, D.C. example, if the, you know, the Wizards, the basketball team was playing and he incited a riot there. I mean, no, this is politics specific. This is Congress specific. This is counting of the electoral votes, which is the final step in the transfer of power specific.
And their argument number three, and there may be others, but these are the ones that jumped out at me in this one Fox segment that I saw with a couple of lawyers making Trump's case. Number three, when the Democrats argue that Trump didn't do much to restrain the rioters once the break-in began, and therefore he's guilty of incitement, well, that might be negligence, one of them said, but negligence is not incitement. Your reaction?
So two things. First of all, I would argue the president has more of a duty than an average person. The president takes an oath to see that the laws are faithfully executed, to uphold the Constitution. And if you see the Constitution being trampled on and people interfering with this core constitutional function, then it's not okay as a president to say, I don't have an affirmative duty to do anything. I'm just going to let it be. That is impeachable. We could argue about whether that's criminal, but that sure as heck is impeachable. The second thing is another relevant aspect of his reaction after the fact is that it sheds light on what his intent was all along, because all the evidence I've seen shows that Donald Trump was anywhere between indifferent at best and gleeful at worst for him about what had happened. I've not seen a single piece of evidence suggesting that in the immediate aftermath of this attack, he was horrified or upset about what had happened. And look at his tweet. And I've said this several times. To me, the most compelling single piece of evidence in this case about what Donald Trump meant and intended and wanted was the tweet that he sent at 6:01 p.m. that day, a couple hours after the insurrection had ended, the riot had ended, where he calls the people who had just done that, who had just torn the Capitol apart and with death resulting, he called them great patriots, and he said, remember this day forever. Does that sound like somebody who's horrified or upset or offended by what they saw? Or does that sound like somebody who's quite pleased at what he just saw? I think it's obviously the latter. And to me, that shows that this is what he hoped they would do, this is what he wanted them to do, and this is what he intended them to do.
So last question. You said in your podcast today that if yesterday wasn't a game changer, you don't know what would be. But maybe that's a former prosecutor's view, when in the political context in which this is actually happening, nothing would be a game changer and nothing will.
Yeah, that's 100%. That's exactly how I followed that comment. I am constantly having to divorce myself from my prosecutorial instinct, where when you're trying a case as a prosecutor, your jury is 12 civilians, and they know nothing about this case, and they've been vetted to an extent permitted by our jury selection process for impartiality. And if there's any potential partiality, I've seen people get thrown off juries because, oh, my uncle's a cop, I sort of, you know, tend to lean towards cops. You're out. This is not that. This is 100 jurors, all of whom are explicitly partisan, every one of whom has a D or an R next to his or her name. And so it's a different being altogether. And I understand that ultimately politics and the individual senator's political fortunes will rule the day. I do wonder, though, if we get to a point, especially for some of those who may still be on the fence, where it becomes more politically advantageous, even for Republicans, to say, no, I'm just done with this. I'm out. I'm not okay with what Trump did, as opposed to sort of having his back. And everyone, obviously, depending on what state they're from and what their own ideology is making different determinations along those lines.
Eli Honig, CNN legal analyst and host of a daily impeachment podcast, while this goes on, called Third Degree, former federal prosecutor and New Jersey state prosecutor. He'll have a book coming out this summer about William Barr called Hatchet Man. Eli, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian. I had a good time with it.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.